and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today on the show, it's not one band at a time, it's 365 days at a time. The month, the year, the days, the time in our history that was too big for just one band. We do one of these every season, and it's time for another year-long episode of Soundography. No, the show itself won't be a year long.
I was going to say,
the
wow.
Topic,
I have plans.
Clear your schedule, Hammond. We're here. We're doing this for a full year. No, we're going to be talking about the year 1971. Now, is there something special about the year 1971?
Yeah, somebody was born. A thing happened in Germany.
A thing happened. I love it. All right. Well, we're going to get to it. Let's go ahead and get started with this, kind of the way we always do with these episodes that cover a year. We go through month by month, talk about the events that happened in that month, and then kind of go, you know, beyond that as we discover kind of all the events. And then at the very end, we're going to talk about our favorite songs from that year. So let's get started. We're going to start with January. But it's going to go pretty quick because apparently nothing happened in January of 1971. It was like everyone took a break. They said, okay, 1970 was crazy, peeps. We're going to kind of take a break and we're going to pick back up on February 1st.
I looked at three different sources to see if anything of any note happened, and nothing was listed in January of 71.
That is hilarious. I love that. So let's jump right into February of 1971. On the 1st, Ginger Baker and Elvin Jones held a drum battle at the Lyceum. On the 3rd, Davy Jones announced that he was leaving the Monkees, saying goodbye to Peter Tork and Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz, and going off on his own.
So I don't know where to go with this. I don't know if to bring up the fact that this is 2 weeks in a row that the Monkees came up in the show, or if I say that Davy Jones has gone to this locker.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I like both of those. We'll stick with the 2 weeks in a row we're talking about the Monkees. That's crazy. I like that better. On the 8th of February, Bob Dylan's documentary Eat the Document makes its premiere.
Have you seen this? Are you familiar with this at all?
I haven't. No, I've never even heard of that. Eat the Document?
Yeah, I haven't either. Doing the research for this, I realized that the Stones, Dylan, and Zappa were kind of the big things in 71. And this is before Bob Dylan kind of picked up his need for subtitles. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested in some of these earlier Dylan things, just because what I know of Dylan isn't what my parents know of Dylan.
Sure.
So
sure.
When I make jokes about Dylan needing subtitles, everyone kind of rolls their eyes because they think I'm being really crappy, but that's all I know.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, and it's funny to call us younger generations, but younger generations like us know Bob Dylan from kind of the way our comedian influences described him. Hey, that, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And less about, oh yeah, that was Blonde on Blonde and Cross the Tracks and Highway 61 and all that stuff. Those weren't albums that came out and redefined our musical tastes at the time, like they were with him. And also probably even the documenting what was happening during that time, right? Times they are changing and A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, not just songs, but like commentary on what was going on at the time.
And exactly. I am not going to ever discount Bob Dylan's ability to be a songwriter. Sure. I will make fun of his diction, but then again, Tom Petty has done the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, you're not wrong. It's definitely true. It seems like something really cool to check out. Eat the Document on February 8th, 1971 came out. On the 16th of February, Alan Passaro of Hell's Angels, who was acquitted in January for the stabbing death of Meredith Hunter at Altamont in 1969, files a lawsuit against the Rolling Stones for invasion of privacy because Gimme Shelter, the movie, the documentary, showed the incident.
Now, this does help us fix a glaring omission from our 69 episode.
Yeah, we forgot to talk about Altamont
yes.
and the concert that the Stones, well, the Stones themselves didn't hire the Hells Angels to do security.
Who did hire them? Was it Altamont, or did they just show up and say, we're doing this?
No, I'm sure it was like either the venue hired them, or I wouldn't even assume that it was like the management, like Rolling Stones management saying, hey, you know, we should get to do security are the Hells Angels. But that was an unfortunate situation because Meredith Hunter got stabbed by a member of the Hells Angels, well, this Alan Passaro, and just kind of cast a black mark over the whole event. And, mm-hmm. and when you hear the term Gimme Shelter, in addition to it being a really cool song, you hear about this, this event, and it definitely is a really sad thing that happened as part of it.
Yes. But it does make me feel better that we can kind of make things right from 69, a few years later.
Mm-hmm. Right. Correct. In March, on March 1st, John Deacon joined the band Queen. Now, Freddie Mercury, Roger Taylor, Brian May, all members of the band, and prior to John Deacon joining, the name of the band wasn't Queen. It was Larry Lurex. And I almost included a Larry Lurex song in my lineup, but decided not to.
I'm glad that they changed to Queen.
Yes.
Larry Lurex sounds like something you got in Dr. Seuss book. And
well, it sounds like something you have to order over the counter at your pharmacist.
Yes. Or it sounds like a video game knockoff from that series of games from the 80s and 90s, Leisure Suit Larry Lurex.
Oh, right. Leisure Suit Larry Lurex. Yes. That's a favorite, right? Who doesn't love that? Funny stuff for sure. Let's see. Led Zeppelin debuted their song Stairway to Heaven at a concert in Belfast.
Yeah, I guess that goes on to do something, bigger later.
You know, those songs without choruses, really got no use for them. They're never going to go anywhere. I get when I look to the west and my spirit is crying for leaving. In my thoughts I have seen smoke through the trees and the voices of those who stand up. On the 12th of March, the Allman Brothers recorded the live album at Fillmore East, and on the 16th, the Grammy Awards are broadcast live for the first time ever.
Now that's crazy to think that technically in my life, well, not quite my lifetime, that the Grammys have been broadcast live. That was something that started.
Yeah, then. that it wasn't happening before. I know. It does seem kind of crazy.
Because I feel like the Rat Pack era would have eaten the Grammys up if they'd been mm-hmm. broadcast live.
Sure. Sure. No, it seems crazy that happened in our lifetime, but I guess it makes sense. In April, now we go to the 6th, the Rolling Stones throw a party in Cannes to announce their new contract with Atlantic and Rolling Stones Records.
Yeah, so they got a brand new contract with Atlantic, and then they got part of the deal was they got to start Rolling Stone Records, which I guess means that all of their masters and all their stuff is theirs, which is a really lucrative deal for them.
Yeah, and their discography after that is like all of their classic stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Sticky Fingers and Some Girls and
The Harlem Shuffle,
Emotional Rescue and Tattoo You. Exactly. I mean, you look at the stuff that came out before that. I mean, they had Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed.
Oh, and don't forget Dancing in the Streets.
No, try to forget Dancing in the Streets, please. For the love of all that's holy, forget Dancing in the Streets. But, it was like those classic albums, especially Sticky Fingers, which mm-hmm. was the first one released as part of this agreement. Really cool. Who was, who were they with before? Was that, Decca?
I think it was Decca, but yeah. I'm not sure.
Cool. Very cool. And then, you know, something happened on the 25th.
Yep.
Hammond enters the world in Kassel, Germany.
Yep.
So you're not even American born.
No, I was. My parents are American. My dad was air military.
He was stationed. So this was on a base. Right.
No, it was actually a German hospital. And I've got all kinds of wacky paperwork to prove that I'm actually American that I have to submit when I do my passport stuff. It's not easy.
So let me see your papers.
Yeah, it's rough. Sometimes it's just too much hassle.
Oh,
from Kassel.
That's completely different. Completely different accent there. More Rolling Stones news. On May 12th, Mick Jagger marries Bianca Demasias. Ringo and Paul and their wives were among the guests there.
And again, when you have these kind of events in music history, like we did when the band had their final concert, if something had gone wrong at that event, music would have been forever changed.
Oh, yeah. No kidding, right? Jeez, like a bad wedding cake or something like that. Like,
bad shrimp allergy.
Right. Right. Bad shrimp served there. Holy mackerel. That would stink. kind of continuing with the Beatles there. On June 6th, John Lennon, D-Day as a matter of fact, John Lennon and Yoko joined Frank Zappa on stage, and that recording would be released the next year on the Sometime in New York City album. Carole King gives her first...
One of just 138 Zappa releases.
Yeah, right, as we know. As we know. On June 8th, Carole King gives her first performance at Carnegie Hall. This would be the year that she released her monumental Tapestry album. Mm-hmm. So this was a huge year for Carole King.
Yeah.
You know, songs like It's Too Late and I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet. Prior to that, you know, kind of your Brill Building songwriter with Goffin, Gary Goffin. Jerry Goffin? Gary Goffin.
Gary.
It's one of those, yeah, okay. It's one of those where it's like, is it a hard G or a soft G?
It's a GIF, not a GIF.
No. Anyway, this was like her first, more of like a breakthrough musical release. From the 20th to the 24th, the first Glastonbury Festival is held. Performers on stage include David Bowie, Traffic, Fairport Convention, Quintessence, and Hawkwind.
So when I was typing this up, I asked myself the question, could we do a Fairport Convention episode of the show?
Well, people came out of that. Didn't Richard Thompson come out of Fairport Convention?
I think so.
Yeah, he had left the band in 1969, so he'd been gone a couple of years. But
I mean, there are a couple of them there. Right. The Hawkwind, Traffic, Fairport Convention, those are all bands that I think could be interesting because I'm not super familiar with them, and I don't know how many people are, but I think there's a lot of stuff there that we could have a good time uncovering.
I think for sure, yeah. Hawkwind, man, they're like Ginger Baker and... Mm-hmm. Let Me Kill Meister from,
come on.
Motorhead.
There you go.
Man, my brain is just fried today. I don't know what I've been doing today, but, haven't been drinking. I haven't done any drugs or anything, people, but boy, my gosh, I just can't come up with stuff all of a sudden. Some sci-fi stuff like Hawkwind was big into the sci-fi themes in their songs. Anyway. Yeah, we could definitely consider doing some of those. And then on June 27th, Bill Graham closes Fillmore East with a final show featuring the Allman Brothers, the Beach Boys, and the band Mountain.
Yep.
On July 3rd, Jim Morrison of The Doors is found dead in a bathtub in Paris. He was only 27 years old. Part of that dead at 27 club.
Yes. I was going to ask, is there a conspiracy around the death of Jim Morrison?
I don't think there is. I don't ever remember hearing about like questions about his death like there have been about other musicians. Everybody just watches the Doors documentary with Val Kilmer, not documentary, the Doors biopic with Val Kilmer and says, oh yeah, that seems logical. Okay, move on.
but that dead at 27 though, that's a huge number of people. We could actually do a whole episode of the dead at 27s.
That would be interesting. I think that would be a really interesting episode, actually. something to consider for sure. Let's see, Grand Funk Railroad on July 9th become only the second band after the Beatles to perform a sold-out show at Shea Stadium.
You skipped the 4th.
Oh, I did. You know, it's funny because I thought that was...
I thought it was when I was typing it, but...
Yes, July 4th, Bill Graham closes Fillmore West. We talked about Fillmore East. Fillmore West with a final show featuring Santana, Creedence Clearwater Revival, and the Grateful Dead.
Okay, so I'll be honest with you. That's the one that I would have wanted to go to.
Between Allman Brothers, Beach Boys, mm-hmm. and Mountain, and yeah. Santana, CCR, and Grateful Dead. Man, I would have loved to have picked and chosen. I think I would have liked to have seen... Oh, boy, no matter how I finish this, I'm going to piss off somebody, I think. But I would have loved to have seen Santana, Creedence, and the Beach Boys at one show.
Yes.
Out of those six acts, those would be the three that I would have said, oh, those are the ones I want to see. On August 1st, Brian was getting ready to celebrate his second birthday, but the concert for Bangladesh is held in New York featuring George Harrison, Ravi Shankar, Ringo Starr, Bob Dylan, Leon Russell, Billy Preston, Eric Clapton, and Badfinger. What a lineup, man. All right. Heck with Fillmore East and West.
Yes.
That would be the one to see, right?
Except
there.
For Ravi Shankar. I don't need any more sitar in my life.
What, you have enough sitar in your
yes,
life?
Yes, I just...
I imagine he didn't do like a long solo himself. I mean, I think that he got up there with George and Ringo and did
that one, you know, from Sgt. Pepper.
Well, there's a few songs. Yeah, the Within You, Without You. But I mean, there were a few songs where he provided some music for some backing music for the Beatles.
Yeah.
Or at least where sitar was used.
Yeah. I'm just... Yeah, okay. So Sgt. Pepper is without a doubt my favorite Beatles album.
Yeah.
On my phone, I skip one song.
Okay.
It is that song.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have it on my phone.
Wow.
I'm not wrong. I'm not alone.
I was going to say you're not wrong. You're not alone. I mean, I was not a fan of that song for the longest time because I felt like thematically it wasn't poppy like the rest of the album. The rest of the album is so pop centric. I've come around on that stuff, on George Harrison and his love for sitar music. I think John was probably involved with that too, but I think it was primarily that time that, the Beatles spent in India, specifically George Harrison and his influences there that made them pull that in.
What we need to do is get together a band that has a sitar and a cowbell. And we're good.
I can't wait to see where this is going. Okay.
That's a powerful duo that any band could build around.
I was really expecting there to be some sort of punchline.
Oh, no. It's all about the buildup with that one.
That's hilarious. Also on August 1st, the Sonny and Cher variety show premieres on CBS.
So as this year progresses, there are a lot of those kind of shows that crop up in 1971.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that that was such a huge thing back in the 70s, but man, you hardly ever see that anymore. I mean, the Mandrells had their own show. The Osmonds, of course, had their own show. And separately, Donnie and Marie, I think, had like a more focused show on the two of them.
Mm-hmm. So in the world of music today, mm-hmm. who would you want to host a variety show?
The Spice Girls.
That was
I'm sorry, did I say that
fast.
Yeah. No, okay. Who would I want to versus who do I think could?
Okay, good. That's a good qualification.
Yeah, let's see here. I think it would need to be a band. I hate to say it. It would need to be kind of a younger band because it would need to focus not just on their music, but also on kind of a comedy variety mm-hmm. thing. Like,
I've got an answer.
Oh, gosh. Let's hear it.
Hanson Brothers.
Oh, there you go. Man, is there any way to do that where it just doesn't sound so cheesy, though? I mean, I'm picturing...
The Hanson Brothers Power Hour?
I'm picturing any of these where it's like, open with a song, great. All right, we're good. We're off to a great start. Then there's just always some awkward comedy stuff, right?
Yeah, a dating skit, mom cooking breakfast skit, a school skit, then another song.
Right. Exactly. And then, you know, we're going to get, hey, everybody, look who's a special guest, Kevin James from the King of Queens.
He's the principal.
And the half man from Two and a Half Men, whatever his name is.
Cryer?
No, he was the whole man.
Oh.
Charlie Sheen was a whole man and John Cryer was a whole man, but it was the half man from Two and a Half
the
Men.
Kid. Okay.
The kid. Yeah. The kid. Anyway. Yeah, maybe there's a really good reason these things don't exist anymore. Oh, but you know what would be great? Is a mock style one of these, like a Christopher Guest style, a Mighty Wind kind of
with Dream Theater.
Why bring them into this? We're looking at an hour long show. Sorry, we don't have time for our guests, Edie Brickell and the Rockettes, but we'll be back next week. Thanks for coming to the Dream Theaters with a variety show. No, but I mean, it'd be like you'd get your, you know, like Jane Lynch and that dude.
The hey, what's happening? Hey, what happened?
No, but the guy from Party Down.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Ken. Shoot, can't remember his last name, but Ken so-and-so and Jane Lynch. And they are a couple that are like a Sonny and Cher style couple. And they do this variety show. They perform a song. They do these awkward skits. I think something like that could succeed now.
Okay, how about this? Okay, yeah. I'm taking your idea, but moving it a little bit further into not obscenity, into into
further into obscenity.
I was gonna say into what's the word?
Obscurity?
Not obscurity, the word silly. Into
parody?
Parody. Yes. Satire? Yes. Mm-hmm. Who's the lady who was the dog trainer with the terrier and then the man with the two left?
Best in Show?
Yes. And then she
Jane Lynch.
No, no.
Oh,
no.
I don't know if it. No, not you're thinking about the two from SCTV. So yes. Eugene Levy and
the lady.
Yes, Catherine O'Hara.
Yes. Have her.
All right, I'm on a roll now. Yeah, I'm remembering stuff. I'm
have,
good.
Have her, and it's more of a Carol Burnett parody.
Okay. Yeah, I like this.
And she has her group of players, and it's about the drama, right. Kind of like Noises Off, behind the scenes. Stuff.
Okay.
And how they're all kind of nuts and don't get along, but when they're in front of the audience taping the shows, they are forced to be these icons of comedy smile and friendship and, that they yes. had been known for.
So you're thinking this would be like a, like it would go back and the show would go back and forth between the comedy. I mean, it would be all comedy, but mm-hmm. it would go back and forth between what the viewers are seeing
mm-hmm.
who are fans of the show. And then the back behind the scenes stuff mm-hmm. like, oh, kind of like the Muppet Show.
Or even like Noises Off is a great example of this, where the first act is all.
Or the Muppet Show.
Yes.
Which was exactly that. Like yes. It was. Mm-hmm. Okay, I like it. I like all these ideas. Back to 1971, August 14th. That was a tangent, wasn't it?
Yes, it
August
was.
August 14th, The Who released their fifth album, Who's Next? And this album reaches number one in the UK and the US, despite the album cover where it looks like they just all took a whiz on a big concrete structure. It is one of my favorite Who albums. That's such a great album. As a matter of fact, that'll probably get brought up too in my playlist at the end. In September, on September 11th, the Jackson 5 cartoon series starts on ABC.
Unrelated events.
There was just no way to pull that Band-Aid off without some sort of pause, right?
Yep, totally unrelated events.
Yes, completely unrelated events. I'm trying to remember this. I don't know if I ever saw it.
I think it was a Filmation. I think it was animated very much like the animated Star Trek show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard not to think of Fat Albert as kind of being the best example of this, because I do seem to remember the Jackson 5 doing that, perform a song at the end of the show that kind of wraps everything up that they learned in the first first part of the show.
Yep.
But it's really just...
Now, remember, Michael, monkeys don't make pets. Okay, Tito.
That was not an episode, was it?
No.
When I grow up, I want to have my own place with a Ferris wheel and all the kids can come visit. It'd be great. But I do remember that whole looped animation of them performing their instruments at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
They also had a live action show later on, I think, didn't they?
Like a variety hour kind of thing, like the Osmonds?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I think they did. I think it came on like right after Donnie and Marie and like right before the Mandrills.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Because that was the thing back then. I mean, that was like, you know, that was a big source of making money. Probably the record companies made the money from the albums, kind of like, you know, like they do now with some pop acts. The band makes their money from the from touring. And then you've got TV producers who wanted their own slice of the pie by doing these TV shows starring them. Interesting. Moving on to October. October 5th, Black Sabbath performed the first set of their Whiskey a Go-Go performance, all wearing white tuxedos. That's awesome. I cannot visualize. No, I can. I can totally visualize Ozzy Osbourne wearing a white tuxedo because I think I've seen that photo.
Yeah, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, the drummer guy.
The drummer guy.
I can't think of the drummer, his name, and Ozzy.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try and go there. I'm smart enough not to wade in those untested waters. In November, on the 6th, Cher earned her first solo number one with Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves. It was eventually certified gold.
And a karaoke hit for the youth of America. Sell a couple bottles of Dr.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. I mean, but Half Breed, there's so many songs, Bang Bang, that that came out of her solo career after, well, kind of separating from Sonny Bono.
Yep.
I don't know if they were, I don't think they were separated at this point because their TV show had only been like 6 months. August, 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah, I think that she was just, I think it was just a solo record, kind of like, you know, how Kiss did their four solo records.
Yeah. On the 8th, Led Zeppelin released their fourth album, which would become the biggest selling album of 1972. It's also the band's biggest selling album and the fourth best selling album of all time. And this, of course, is the one that's called Led Zeppelin 4. It's called Zoso. It's the one with Stairway to Heaven and Black Dog and... all those classic songs. What, again, fantastic album. In December, on the 4th, the Montreux Casino in Montreux, Switzerland, catches fire and burns during a performance by Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention when a fan, or a stupid, as they call him in the song, fires a flare gun into its rafters. Members of Deep Purple, who are due to begin recording at the casino the next day, watch the scene from their hotel across Lake Geneva and later immortalize the events in their song Smoke on the Water.
Which we talked about, when did we talk? Oh, Zappa. We talked about
this. Oh, sure. Zappa. Talking about the right Montreux Casino. Yeah. I mean, that talk about a song that, that narrates the entirety of that event, right? It's like, we were all set to perform and Frank Zappa and the Mothers were rocking and then some stupid with a flare gun burned the place to the ground. So we had to find a mobile van. We recorded there and it was all really good. And, it was like that song pretty much just wrote itself.
Yeah.
It became one of the greatest guitar licks. I mean, when you, when somebody picks up a guitar to try it out, like at a musician superstore someplace, it's either the opening notes of Stairway to Heaven or it's you know, to kind of test out. If it weren't for 1971, what would people play when they picked up a guitar?
They would have had to wait until 91 when everyone learned the opening to Enter Sandman.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. December 10th, we talked about this too on the Frank Zappa show. Frank Zappa broke his leg after being pushed off stage by a fan.
Another, he needs to have smarter fans. That's twice right. in one
if
month.
It's not a flare gun. It's, no kidding. It's like 6 days apart. Like, well, we narrowly escaped being burned to death at the Montreux Casino.
It almost makes now you wonder if he had a contract on him.
Maybe. Yeah, fun. And then on December 31st, New Year's Eve, Bob Dylan made a surprise appearance for the encore of the band's New Year's Eve concert.
Which totally makes sense because they were tight if you listen to the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Other notable events. Ann Wilson joined the band Heart. This was an interesting thing, by the way. The band Heart, originally, prior to the release of the first album, I believe, it was Ann and Nancy Wilson and their boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
And their boyfriends, I guess, decided, nah, this isn't going anywhere. They left, and Ann and Nancy brought in new musicians and then became one of the biggest selling bands of the 70s.
Yeah, and even into the early 80s.
Oversimplifying, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Because these Dreams was a huge hit.
These Dreams and All I Want to Do and...
Barracuda. Yeah,
and Barracuda, exactly. Yeah, I forgot about all that. Yeah, I mean, talk about kicking themselves. I'm sure those guys were like, man, we should have... I think they were brothers, too. Weren't the... Oh, man. This is like some deep, dark trivia, but I feel like the...
It's the a secret guys, trivia of Heart.
The deep, dark Heart trivia. I want to say that the two guys that they were dating were also brothers. Let me see here. Hold on a second. 1967, Steve Fossen formed The Army with Roger Fisher, Don Wilhelm and Ray Schaefer on drums. They played in Bothell in northeast of Seattle. Let's see. The name White Heart came from a discussion Roger Fisher's brother Mike Fisher had with Michael Monroe, who came up with the name White Heart without the E. And Wilson joined. Then they renamed the band Hocus Pocus. Mike Fisher, Roger's brother, was set to be drafted in the military. Nancy Wilson has stated that when he didn't report for duty, his home was raided, but he slipped out a rear window. Here we go. On one day in 1972 or 1971, Mike crossed the border to visit family and by chance met Ann at a Hocus Pocus or White Heart show, depending on what the date was. According to Nancy, that meeting was when she and Michael fell in love and Ann decided to follow Mike back to Canada. Yes, Nancy Wilson joined in 1974, soon after became romantically involved with Roger, his brother, who originally said they referred to the two couples as the Heart Partnership. And then, so basically those two guys, those two brothers left and Nancy Wilson kind of kicked butt and went big. Anyway. I love that. I love that that story. It's just so cool. Such a great formation of a band story.
Nothing like draft dodging to bring a band together.
Right? Let's go to Canada and hide. Brad Whitford joined Aerosmith also in 1971. Elton John has his first international hit with Your Song.
Which I'm sure Scott loves.
I don't know if he likes that one or not. Because I think he likes Moulin Rouge, and he was saying, I kind of like that song.
Okay, yeah. Don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again...
Yeah.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go listen to last month's TMS sometime.
Yes, exactly. At some point we talked about that. Around the time that Elton John, the day before Elton John announced his retirement, Scott threw shade on him. Donna Summer begins her recording career. Death that came too soon or passed away too soon, right? She had so many great disco hits and then just kind of disappeared. Rick Springfield left his band Zoot to start a solo career. Daryl Dragon and Tony Tennille start performing as the captain in Tennille, and he never takes off that dumb hat. And Rick Wakeman, as I like to call him for short, Rick Wakeman joins the band, yes.
And forever wore capes.
Oh, really? Is that a thing?
Yeah,
really?
he's a cape-wearing keyboard player.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
Yep.
Can't just be for superheroes. Hammond, tell us about some of the biggest hit singles from 1971.
So some of the biggest hits were My Sweet Lord by George Harrison, Imagine by a man named John Lennon, Maggie May by Rod Stewart, Rose Garden by Lynn Anderson, and Brown Sugar by the Rolling Stones. Speaking of Imagine, we're just coming off the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. What did you think of that cover?
Man.
I made the same noise.
Yeah, I really, really liked the sentiment, and I liked the visuals of the performance.
Mm-hmm.
But that first guy, mm-hmm. who they just credited as Korean rock and roll star, like this is his only claim to fame. He just sat there like there was no. I was wondering if it was a wax figure that they brought out and played audio through his mouth because he didn't move.
He could have been a hologram with all the technology they had on display.
Could be. The K-pop singer I thought was really good, and the Korean boy band performer I thought was
good. They actually sounded really good together. I would have liked to have seen them just do it as a duet with them harmonizing and playing off each other vocally.
Right. And then the other woman, her facial expressions were just too distracting.
I think she was really working hard to sing in English, and I will give her the benefit of the doubt for that.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably it. I'm being way too harsh. You're right.
Yeah. I think she did a fine job considering that she was working very hard to sing in English.
Probably. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Anyway, love the visuals. Love the whole, like, having all the countries' names kind of slide down onto the stage from the from the audience. I thought visually that was a really, really cool concept. And then having it kind of center on everybody they're kind of in a dove shape. Well, they're in a dove shape. It was...
It ended up looking more like the outline of the crow that he set on fire from the first movie.
You would say that. Sometimes the crow brings them back to the stage. I really thought that was a very touching ceremony and very a great representation of the joining of North and South Korea for this thing.
Yeah, no, I'm not knocking any of the effort. I wish that they had paid maybe a better attention to who they had doing what.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. But overall, really enjoyed that. I actually really liked all the opening ceremonies.
I did too.
I thought that was really good.
The drone thing was incredible.
Oh, totally. And you know what? Kudos to whoever came up with that. And I cast no fault that they didn't do that live because all the moving pieces that had to come together for all that. Mm-hmm. Hey, to see that it happened and that they did it is enough for me. I don't need to see it live.
Yep.
Super cool. Movies that came out that year.
So I guess the 10 top movies of the year were The Last Picture Show, Carnal Knowledge, A Clockwork Orange, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, which is a weird
feature.
Which is a weird juxtaposition against each other. Fiddler on the Roof to top it off. The Summer of 42, The French Connection, Diamonds Are Forever, Dirty Harry, and Billy Jack.
That's crazy. The only two out of that list I've seen are Diamonds Are Forever and Clockwork Orange. I need to get on my 1971 movie viewing. I'm surprised I haven't seen stuff like Fiddler on the Roof or Dirty Harry or The Last Picture Show, which is regarded as a very as a classic.
I haven't seen Carnal Knowledge, and I haven't seen Billy Jack or The Summer of 42. All the others I have seen.
Hmm. Oh, really? Okay.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. Well, let's get to who would you like to cover 1971, Hammond?
Well, it's of the songs that were the biggest hits, I actually like one of my favorite covers of Imagine was done by Blues Traveler.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. And we've talked about them on the show, of course, obviously. ¶¶ right, let's get to this. For our year-long shows, instead of doing 5 songs, we do 10 songs that came out that year or that were on the Billboard charts that year. Sometimes those songs come out in 1970 and they're still on the Billboard charts. We're not playing by, you know, strict, hard and fast rules. We're flexible.
We won't kick off one another if the rules are broken a little bit.
No, that's absolutely correct. All right. So here's my playlist of my favorite songs from that year, or great songs that were representative of the year. Baby Blue by Badfinger. This was one I felt like I had to kind of begin with because this is such a great song. Without a word. And it had a resurgence a few years ago when it was used during the closing, during the final moments of Breaking Bad. Kind of represent the blue meth that Walter White was cooking. That's the, you know, the blue reference there. But also it's just such a great song. And Amy Mann does an incredible cover of this song. It was almost Day After Day was almost a choice for my list here. I love the band Badfinger so much so that I think it would be fun to talk about them for an episode of Soundography.
I added them.
Did you? Cool. Mm-hmm. So look for them maybe in another season because, you know, maybe 3 songs by Badfinger, 4 or 5 songs. And it's great just to kind of get that experience of finding out more about these guys that maybe you only know like a handful of music by. So Badfinger would be a fun one too. To look at. My number 2 song, you either know the song or you don't. The song is called DOA, and it's by a band called Blood Rock. It is one of the most gruesome and horrifying songs ever. It's a first-person account of being, I think, in a car accident and the feeling of, you know, the ambulance is showing up and all you see is blood that's running down your forehead and you're like, you're basically experiencing through this song the experience of dying. Radio stations wouldn't play it, not just because there's an ambulance wail in the song that people would probably think is right behind them. I hate songs that have sirens in them for that reason. But if you have not heard DOA by Blood Rock, you got to go check it out. You'll hear a snippet of it here on the show, obviously, but go check out the
rest. And also Spotify does not have it.
It doesn't. Oh, man. So go find it somewhere because it's really worth hearing. YouTube. Just find it on YouTube.
Or maybe some Russian MP3 site might have it.
So maybe, no promises. Sweet City Woman by the Stampeders. To the city lights, to the pretty face that shines her light on the city nights. And I gotta catch a noon train, I gotta be there on time. Oh, it feels so good to know she waits at the end of the line. Boy, talk about your one-hit wonder. I looked all through the band's biography to see if maybe somebody from this band went on to do something else in another band and become famous some other way. No, this is like Sweet City Woman by the Stampeders. It's about the only thing that the Stampeders are known for. But it's such a great song. Opens with banjo. Actually, banjo all the way through the song. They even talk about the banjo in the lyrics. Never Can Say Goodbye by the Jackson 5. Boy, talk about your great covers. The Communards had a great cover of that song too. Worth checking out. But it's a great song. Man, it's, you know, you've got songs like ABC and Stop the Love You Save and stuff like that. But this song showcases Michael Jackson's range like no other song. This is such an amazing example of how he could sing. And so great. Such a great song. The Guess Who has my number five song on my playlist. No Sugar Tonight and New Mother. It's like a, it's one of those songs that has another song jammed in it. And it's a very abrupt change, but it's such a great guitar lick that that it blends it together so nicely. Well, I can hide silent footsteps crowding me, sudden darkness, but I can see. No sugar tonight in my coffee, no sugar tonight in my tea, no sugar to stand beside me. And I think it's about, I don't know if this is, if this is really what it's about. I probably should have looked at the lyrics before the show, but I assume it's the changes when you have a kid, and it's like the new mother nature taking over, and no sugar tonight. Everybody's exhausted, so not getting any sugar in your coffee or your tea.
Metaphorically speaking.
I could be wrong, and I hope I'm not, because I really love that translation. The next one. This is such a great discovery that came out of this week, but when we did our ELO show, I also grabbed Music by the Move, which is the band that Jeff Lynne was in before ELO. To the Ben Crawley Steel Company. Well, I tried my hand at ranching, but this didn't come off. Seems nothing in that for me. It always tried my patience, which I haven't enough. And found this song called The Ben Crawley Steel Company. Now, you listen to the song, and it feels like a cutting room floor Johnny Cash tune. But you listen to it, and there's no way you're going to say, oh, yeah, this is what led to ELO. I can totally hear it. It's not, man. It feels like it's Johnny Cash all the way. It's such a great song. But wow, it does not feel like it shares any DNA with Rockaria and Telephone Line by ELO.
Mr. Blue Sky.
And Mr. Blue Sky, exactly. Number seven is a T-Rex song. And no, it's not Bang a Gong, Get It On. I'm picking a different one. It's from the same album. But boy, this one's way more of a bluesy rocker, way more accessible, I feel like, than Bang a Gong, Get It On. It's called Jeepster. Cause you're my love. And it's just a fun tune. Very bluesy, very 12-bar boogie kind of thing. Really, really cool. Number eight is Hang On In There by the Stovall Sisters. Now, I don't know why, but I don't always go to funk. When I'm like looking for music to listen to during the day when I'm working or in the car or whatever, I might put on New Wave. I'll put on some Britpop from, you know, the 90s or whatever. And I don't always think about putting on funk, and I don't know why I don't, but this one came up in Random Shuffle for my 1971 playlist, and it's like, oh my God, this is such a great song. And looking at who the Stovall Sisters were, other than having this as kind of a moderate hit, they were also the backing vocalists for Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum. So when you listen to that song, you're hearing the Stovall Sisters in the background.
They're the ones going, boop, 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 boop.
No, that was a guitar.
I know.
But in the a cappella version, it's totally them. For my number nine one, I jammed a couple of these in here. We talked a lot about the Stones and the Who earlier in the show, and I didn't want to just devote an entire item in my playlist to the Who and an entire item in my playlist to the Stones. So I just jammed them together with Wild Horses by the Stones from that album and Bargain, which came from Who's Next. Wild Horses, they're totally cut from the same classic rock cloth, but they I needed to have a representation of that classic rock style in here. And then finally, number 10, because it's 10 years after, the band that took its name from forming 10 years after the largely believed birth of rock and roll in 1956, they formed 1966. The band is called 10 Years After, and they did a song called, their one hit is a song called I'd Love to Change the World. Now, this is another great classic rock riff, and you hear the song, you're like, oh yeah, I love this. But when you look at the lyrics, there's a little bit of controversy surrounding the lyrics, because they talk about Harrys and freaks and dykes and fairies, and the controversial lyrics to me, and this is kind of an example of how 10 people can hear the same song and read the same lyrics and get 10 completely different interpretations of those lyrics. For me, it's the band talking about how they were perceived as freaks and long-haired hippies and stuff like that, and how, you know, how there was racial inequality and gender inequality and lifestyle choice inequality and stuff. And then it kind of all boils down to rich versus poor, black versus white, stuff like that. And then kind of says, takes all that in and says, you know, we all need to band together and end the war and get some world peace, that you want to change the world, but you don't know what to do. And I really, really like that sentiment. And I don't know what the original artist had in mind for it. I hope that's what it is, because that's the way I interpret it, and I don't want to hear otherwise.
Well, look at you closing out your list with a meaningful song.
Damn right.
I feel like all my stuff is relatively trivial compared to yours.
Well,
more predictable.
I'll be the judge of that. All right, hit us with your playlist.
All right. I feel like I need to go out of order so that I can save some alleged surprises for later, at least create a theme.
Cool.
I am going to go out a little out of order. So my first one is Old Fashioned Love Song by Three Dog Night. Now, we covered these on the Coverthon. And I think you actually had the honor of picking this one.
I think so, yeah. This was, if I remember correctly, this is a song that was written by Hoyt Axton?
I think so.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Hoyt. It was the piano guy that always did the Muppet stuff. He was...
Yes, right.
He did Planet of the Apes on TV.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name. I can actually go back to that thing. Don't I have that in here? No, I guess I don't. And by the way, you chose Old Fashioned Love Song, by the
okay.
way. I
All
didn't.
Right. All right.
Yeah.
And wrapped around the music is the sound of someone promising they'll never go. You swear you've heard it before as it slowly rumbles on.
No, Paul Williams.
Paul Williams. Paul Williams. He was on Planet of the Apes, too.
Was he really?
Yeah, he played one of the apes on the Planet of the Apes TV show.
You're making that up.
No, I am not. Look it up real fast. I am dead serious.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. I'm looking it up. It feels like he was like such a...
stunt casting?
Yeah, no kidding. Andy Williams. All right, I'm just going to... I'm on the Andy Williams page. I'm going to do a search for Andy Williams. Oh, did I say Andy? I meant Paul Williams, right?
Yeah.
Paul Williams. Wow, he looks so different at the 2011 ASCAP photo, because I remember him having that long blonde hair.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and hit images of Paul Williams, Planet of the Apes, as Carson.
Hold on. I'm doing a search this way. Look at that. Virgil, the genius orangutan in Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No idea. That's crazy. Okay, love that.
The things you learn from me.
Yeah, totally. Did he keep his long blonde hair for his appearance as Virgil?
Yeah,
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. It was very nice. It was very obviously him. That's the part that was really interesting.
That's hilarious. Yeah, and he's the guy who wrote Rainbow Connection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did he write It's Not Easy Being Korean?
I think he did a lot of the music for the Muppet movies. I don't know if he did a lot for the TV shows, but...
That's crazy. All right, great, sir. Great start already.
Okay. Next, I will pick Locomotive Breath by Jethro Tull from the album Aqualung. Locomotive Breath runs the all-time loser.
Oh, great. Yes.
I love this song. I love the song in all of its versions and all of its flavors. There's some great covers of it. I love the fact that Jethro Tull was able to cram flute solos into songs where a flute solo should not have been.
Yeah.
And he did it unironically and very well.
And these guys, didn't they get the Grammy for Best Heavy Metal?
Yep. The first year.
MTV Music Awards, or was it? Oh, no, that's right. It was the first Grammy Award for heavy metal.
Yep, the very first Grammy for heavy metal. They were up against Metallica, who had released an album that year. They had not, and somehow Jethro Tull won.
I love that. That's so crazy.
The next, I'm going to reach into my pocket of me loving musicals, and I'm going to pick Day by Day from the musical Godspell. Godspell came out that year, and Day by Day was a hit, I think, like a radio hit from the musical. And the film came out, I think, a couple years later, but a really good musical. I've worked on it a couple of times as a lighting guy and as a stage manager and as a set builder. And I love this musical. So I had to pick something from that.
Cool.
Because of our love for Kevin Gilbert and our ties to Spock's Beard and stuff like that, I had to pull in the band Gentle Giant, their album Acquired Taste. There's a song called Black Cat, both... The guys from Spock's Beard and Kevin Gilbert were huge Gentle Giant fans. And once you listen to some Gentle Giant, you understand that they're pulled a lot of inspiration from these guys. And her eyes are burning yellow, fierce and bright. The nights are dark, the skies are sharp and wide awake. As she acts out her power. So I had to give some love to Gentle Giant.
Interesting. Okay.
We talked about this a little bit in the Peter Gabriel episode, but I really like the musical box from Genesis album Nursery Crime. Just a little bit more time left to live out my life. It's a great album, and it's a great piece of music. That was the first one where they were on the musical break where Peter walked out and came back with the fox head and the wedding dress.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. Yep. Oh, yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, go back to the Genesis episode from the first episode of this season.
The next one I picked was Certified Blues from ZZ Top's first album. Good old-fashioned, you know, straight-up Texas blues song. It's from their first. As we talked about, I really enjoyed early and much, much later ZZ Top. That trifecta of albums in the middle I had a hard time with because they're a little bit too poppy for their own good. Mm-hmm. Then we get into kind of the predictable Hammond list. we'll start with Alice Cooper. It's called Love It to Death. It's the song I'm 18. This was a huge hit for him. This was about signing up for the draft. This is him making a statement about war and being having to sign up for the draft. And This is Alice Cooper at his some of his most Alice Cooperiest.
For sure. Yeah, that's such a rockin' song. And such a great coming of age, angry song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then we do Riders on the Storm from the album L.A. Woman by the band Doors, The Doors. Like a dog without a bone and actor out alone, Riders on the Storm, there's a killer. I played in a Doors cover band called The Hinge when I was in college.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I really did.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I thought that was a joke.
No, I really did.
Okay, I all of a sudden love that. I thought that was a Hammond dad joke. Nope. I was like rolling my eyes at it. But knowing that it's true, I love that.
Nope, I actually did. It was a Doors cover band called The Hinge. And then I picked Pink Floyd's song Echoes from the album Metal. There have been some amazing covers done by a certain band that I love of Echoes. In fact, I have a bootleg of theirs that's called Echoes. But Echoes is a great Pink Floyd song. Metal was at their psychedelic best. Floyd was really starting to kind of get their legs about him. We're just a few years away from, you know, The Wall and Dark Side of the Moon and some of the things that are going to be truly defining for Pink Floyd. But this was a great, great piece of music.
That's a good deep cut. Well, semi deep cut for Pink Floyd. It's a great cut. Mm-hmm. It's a great choice.
And then my last one, which was actually my first one, it's a Roundabout by Yes from the album Fragile. I'll be the Now, Yes actually released two albums this year, and Roundabout is just the song that it defines Yes, early Yes. I mean, later Yes is defined by Owner of a Lonely Heart. Mm-hmm. Early Yes is pretty much defined by either Tales from the Topographic Ocean or by Roundabout.
Yeah. It's a great song. Great keyboard work in that song.
Yep. I had it on a vinyl record for years, and there was a scratch in the organ solo. And I got so used to hearing it that when I finally got it on CD, I missed the scratch.
Right. It was like, wow, how that didn't, that wasn't the beat I was expecting.
Yeah.
Like it. Yeah. I love that. I know exactly what you're talking about with that. Too funny.
So it's a pretty predictable Hammond list, but you know,
very cool. No, it's a great list. Awesome. Oh, I love 1971. Great year. Great year in music and kind of the, I don't know, kind of remarked a change. A lot of great artists going solo, Harrison and Ringo and John, of course. I don't think, I guess Ram came out the year before with Uncle Albert and Paul Lynn and McCartney and that song Uncle Albert and Admiral Halsey. So I don't know if there was something in 71 that Paul McCartney was doing pre-Wings, but and then you had Michael Jackson getting ready to kind of branch off onto his own soon. And I don't know. It was a cool flux time mm-hmm. of music.
Yeah.
A lot of artists getting ready to kind of spread their wings that we know and love today. All right. Well, next week, let's talk about what we're going to be listening to next week, Hammond. That is Coheed and Cambria. A band that had nothing to do with the 1970s, especially 1971. Well, maybe they did. We'll find out. But this is a sponsored episode by our regular super sponsor, Peter Emig. Big thanks to Peter for sponsoring another episode of this and making us listen to another band that we maybe not normally wouldn't have listened to. So I'm looking forward to this.
I would have. I have some other stuff already. Oh, yeah. These guys are right in my wheelhouse.
Are they okay? Yeah, not so for me. As a matter of fact, the only thing I knew was the song that was on Guitar Hero or Rock Band or something, which would be the one that Tristan always wanted to play. Hey, that's going to be coming up next week. If you want to get in touch with us between now and then, please, we encourage you to do so. Email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. You can find us there at The Soundography. For everything else, just visit soundography.com. It's a great website. Contains all of our previous episode. And it's got everything right there in one place that you need, all of our back episodes, all of our links. As a matter of fact, when you go to the show notes of any episode, you're going to find a link to listen to our playlist on Spotify if it's available. If not, then we try and find covers or alternates that would work. You can also find a link to buy music.
So what are we going to put for this year?
Yeah, I was just about to try and come up with that. 1971. I think we put...
I think we have to go the Stones album,
Who's
don't
next?
We?
The Stones
or
the, album?
Or maybe Stones or the Who? But, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, click the link. You'll be surprised. We'll surprise you.
Surprise us.
right? You'll also find a link on there to visit our Patreon. Throw us some support, $1, $2 a month, whatever is easy for you, whatever you can afford. But you are our paycheck. You are our human resources department, and you the listener, are the ones who pay us for doing what we do here. We don't get a kickback from the musicians we talk about. Oh, no. No, it's you. You guys get the chance to tell us how we're doing by paying us.
Sure.
It's a good way of putting it. I like coming up with a new way of describing that every episode. You can also leave us reviews. That's another way of telling us how we're doing. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you want to leave us a review. Let us know what you're thinking about the show and what you want to hear. That's going to do it. We'll be back next week with Coheed and Cambria. And on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Emmett saying that's going to do it. We're going to see you right here next time for Soundography.
Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.